Hello, you're listening to Wine Blast. Thanks for joining us. This one's all about the world's ninth largest wine producer and third largest grower of Pinot Noir.
Which is?
Germany, of course.
Germany.
No, it does do a few other things too.
Just a few other things.
But I thought this was a good way to introduce our subject matter, given Germany is a wine country that right now seems to specialise in defying expectations, redefining what it does and what it can do, rediscovering itself, but also broaching new ground in the process. It's incredibly dynamic and really quite exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's been termed the most exciting country for wine in the world right now by our colleague and friend David Williams recently in The Guardian. Here's another take on the state of German wine right now.
Everything, actually, is exciting. We can produce wonderful Rieslings and the Pinot varieties, so there is Pinot pulling power. Some very sexy wines.
Oh, there we go. Master of Wine and German specialist Alison Fleming there. Now, we'll be hearing more from her later on, as well as from Stefan Doctor of the world-famous Schloss Johannesburg Estate in the Rheingau.
On top of all of that, we'll be doing a tasting of some delicious wines, including some great value bottles, some of which are not what you might expect, I think it's fair to say. All of which has been made possible because this episode is sponsored by Wines of Germany. So thanks to them for making this programme happen and providing us with lots of lovely bottles to taste.
As ever, all opinions are our own and totally independent. And one of the other main reasons we wanted to make this show was because we're just back from a fascinating trip to Germany. One of many we've done over the years, but this one was to co-host the Institute of Masters of Wine's 10th International Symposium in Wiesbaden in the Rheingau, as part of which we talked to a lot of German wine people, drank a lot of German wine, and generally got rather overexcited, didn't we?
I think a lot is probably an understatement. We drank a lot of all kinds of wines, but particularly German wine, including Rheingau Riesling back to 1964, but we'll come on to this in a minute. Before we start in earnest, though, I'd just like to mention yet another reason we're doing this episode, and that's because we had a listener question in from Liam McCann. Do you want to read this one out?
Absolutely. So Liam writes, I've only just delighted on your podcast, the magisterial coverage of 2021 Burgundy. Are the GG wines of Germany something you could cover? I am banjaxed on all fronts, and Liam mentions high auction prices for these wines. What's the difference between GG dry wines and Trocken and Cabernet? I feel safer with traditional Spätlesen, but maybe I'm missing something.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Liam. Lots to get into there, I think it's fair to say, some of which will need a bit of context adding in from things like GG or Grosse Gewächs wines to the various designations like Trocken, Cabernet and Spätlesen. Can I just apologise now for my rubbish German pronunciation, by the way. I just can't do it. I think it's good to get that one out of the way.
You're
much better at German than I am. So how should we do this? Should we dive in first for a very brief bit of context and opinion before bringing in our guests after that?
Yeah, maybe I think we should. Right. And I think a bit of preface is good, particularly when it comes to German wine, because there are lots of misconceptions and confusion around German wine, which is a shame when underneath it all, you have some of the finest wines in the world, increasingly diverse and delicious in style, often really good value and very well suited. And this is the point, to our modern times and our tastes.
Yeah. I think when we were in Wiesbaden, Jancis Robertson called Riesling a very 21st century wine, didn't she? Because of its naturally crisp acidity and lowish alcohol on the one hand, but also the fact it's, as she said, unusually reflective of its site, so terroir expressive, and a versatile partner for food, you know, all of which we'd heartily agree with. So I've gone off on a tangent already, but perhaps we could start there. Germany's grape varieties, you know, principal among which would be Riesling.
Yeah, so Riesling is Germany's widest grown and most famous grape variety. It covers around a quarter of the national vineyard, 24,000 hectares out of 103,000. This makes Germany by far the world's biggest Riesling producer. It has four times the surface area of the next biggest Riesling grower, which is Romania, interestingly. But essentially, well over a third of the world's Riesling vines are in Germany.
So given the size of the German Riesling vineyard, it's not surprising there is variation in the styles of Riesling produced, which is something that lots of people pick up on, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, add into the mix climate change, changing consumer tastes, new generations of winemakers coming through, and you have you could call it a Riesling smorgasbord, you know, featuring everything from bone dry to lusciously sweet wines and everything in between, even sparkling, which is known in Germany as Sekt, I believe. You know, the good stuff is Deutscher Sekt, isn't it?
Yeah, but the one constant with good Riesling is crisp acidity, along with vibrancy and purity, sometimes even a sense of weightlessness, you know, real delicacy and elegance allied to profundity. So it's not one thing. It can make for just brilliantly easy drinking quaffing whites, or be quite an intellectual wine, which I guess is why many a wine lover's favorite white grape is Riesling. And we saw it when it was voted best white grape ever in our episode from season one, didn't we?
Absolutely. Yeah, good recall. That's, I mean, somewhat controversially,
it was,
as far as
surprising.
I remember. Only just pipping Chardonnay to the post, didn't it? And yeah, well, you know, we did discuss Riesling then, didn't we? Just as we did when we talked to famous Mosel grower Ernie Lozen a few episodes later. I think that was called Riesling and the Doctor. But I think one of the key trends to highlight these days with German Riesling is the rise of the dry styles. You know, there was a time when German wine was all about sweet wines. 20 years ago, for example, only a third of German quality wine production was dry. But these days, two-thirds is designated trocken or halbtrocken, so dry or off-dry, with trocken around 50%. That's a big change.
Yeah, and partly that's about climate change, meaning that you can get grapes riper now in what used to be the northernmost major wine-producing regions. So acidity levels are lower, hence less need for sweetness to offset that. But also because growers realise the market tends to prefer dry styles these days.
Yeah, so this leads us on to GG. First, though, a word on the Prädikat or Prädikat system.
Prädikat system.
This was part of the 1971 wine law, which is still controversially in place, whereby German wine was classified according to ripeness or sugar levels at harvest. So Cabernet was the lightest style, off-dry, then Spätlese was richer and slightly sweeter, Auslese even more so, sometimes with a touch of noble rot or botrytis, then Bärenauslese or BA, and then Trockenbärenauslese or TBA, the most intensely sweet and lush, nobly rotten wines of all. That was the scale everyone, all our students learned about, wasn't
it? This and other legislation meant the focus on German wine was on ripeness or sweetness rather than vineyard origin or the best varieties. And this led to quantity often being prioritised over quality. And frankly, by the 1980s, German wine was at an all-time low, wasn't it? But I think, you know, sometimes you need a crisis to generate the positive change. And that's exactly what happened in the 1980s and 90s as quality-focused growers banded together to put the focus back on Germany's great sites and great varieties.
Yeah, and this is where the VDP and GG come in. So the VDP is the Verband Deutscher Prädikatsweingüter.
Well done.
Yes, a group of around 200 quality-oriented German producers. They're a private organisation and they set stringent quality rules, so maximum yields, that kind of thing. And they use historic vineyard classifications to identify the top vineyard sites. And Grosse Lager are the equivalent of Grand Cru, and Erste Lager are the equivalent of Premier Cru.
Yeah, and essentially they sort of set themselves up in opposition to the 1971 German wine law, and they put the emphasis very much on the importance of place as opposed to sugar levels or ripeness. So a Burgundian approach, if you will.
Yeah.
Grosse Gewächs or GG wines, listen up, Liam, are dry wines made from classic varieties grown in single sites classified as Grosse Lager, or as you said, Grand Cru, but they must also have minimum Spätlese levels of ripeness. Now, the first GGs were released in 2002, and this was a seminal moment for the country's wine future. M.W. Ann Kriebel, in her book, The Wines of Germany, calls it a breakthrough for Germany.
Yeah, now it's worth noting that the VDP only accounts for about 5% of Germany's vineyard, but it punches well above its weight, and these are now the GGs, some of the most expensive and sought-after wines in Germany. Remember, we're talking dry Riesling, terroir-driven. And to answer your question fully, Liam, you can make a similar style of wine to GGs if you're not a member of the VDP. in which case you'll probably label it Spätlese Trocken, so a ripe style but made dry, probably with the vineyard name too. But because it's not classified as GG, you can't use that on the bottle. And maybe the associated price won't be quite so high too, such as the cachet of the VDP and GG.
Hopefully this all helps explain things a little bit. Or maybe it's just more confusing. German wine does definitely take a bit of getting to know, especially the often baffling labels. But I think once you start getting the hang of it, it is well worthwhile.
Absolutely.
I mean, think of it maybe like Burgundy with extra layers of information and a bit of fancy calligraphy. And talking of Burgundy, we did want to touch on Pinot, didn't we?
We did, didn't we? But, you know, you mentioned Burgundy. We're very happy dealing with complexity when it comes to Burgundy. Why, we should be happy to deal with that with Germany as well. The rewards are there too in terms of the wines. Anyway, so German Riesling, well known, we know that. But there's also been a quiet revolution on the grape variety front in Germany elsewhere. So much so that now a third of the national vineyard is red.
That's really surprising, isn't it?
Yeah. A third.
Yeah.
Germany's vineyard is red. And Pinot Noir, get this, is now the country's second most planted grape variety after Riesling, having overtaken the decidedly ordinary Müller-Thurgau in 2021.
Don't be mean to Müller-Thurgau.
That's, well, I'm not being mean, but that's sort of new news, as those are the latest figures we have. So that's really good news for Pinot Noir lovers, isn't it?
Yeah. Like us. Not just Pinot Noir lovers, but Burgundy lovers, because Chardonnay's on the rise in Germany too, isn't it? Plantings are up tenfold since 1995. Also, other Pinot varieties are on the rise, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris. There's also Precoce and Meunier. In total, the Pinot family, again, makes up nearly a third of Germany's vineyard, and all of these made in a variety of styles.
Who knew? You know. And then you've got things like the Peewees, which are well worth a brief mention.
Sounds like a kids' TV show, doesn't it?
Bear with me. Because Germany, you know, seems to be at the forefront of this field, what with the excellent research being done now at Geisenheim University in the Rheingau, which is famous for its wine institute, of course. Also because new EU legislation, the Green Deal, aims to reduce pesticide use by 50% by 2030. But anyway, these peewees are not children's programmes. They are essentially hybrid grapevines bred to be resistant to disease, especially fungal pathogens. So they need much fewer sprays to produce a good crop, which means better biodiversity and also less carbon emissions from tractor outings into the vineyard.
Yeah. And peewee varieties have names that you may not have heard, like Souvenir Gris, which
you would have heard that one.
Because it popped up in our soil and geology episode.
Exactly.
No Schist Sherlock. And that was in relation to the Netherlands, wasn't it? But also there's Cabernet Blanc, Solaris, Johannita for the whites, and then Regent, Pinotin and Rondo for the reds. Mm. There are currently 3,518 hectares of peewees in Germany, and that's 3.5% of the national vineyard.
Yeah, we heard some interesting stuff about peewees at the symposium, didn't we? But the problem with peewees is that, you know, while they're much better for the planet, clearly, no one really knows them. And the taste, I think it's fair to say, isn't always entirely magical.
Yeah, I think people haven't quite got to grips with getting
When you put them up against sort of thoroughbred Vitis vinifera like Riesling or Pinot Noir, it's a kind of one-sided battle, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, in a dampish climate like Germany, it's prone to fungal diseases like downy and powdery mildew. They could be good, you know, at least as blenders or in perhaps, I don't know, more mass market wines where the variety isn't the most important
thing. Absolutely. You know, so Professor Reinhard Topfer said at the symposium he expects peewees to be 6-7% market share in Germany by 2030, and that could go as high as 20-30%. You know, he was quite bullish, and he said at the moment this change needs to happen, but it's winemakers who are more scared of peewees than the consumers.
Probably worth a programme in itself, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
Anyway, I think at this point we should bring in our first guest. Alison Fleming is a master of wine of 25 years who fell in love with a German chef and so moved to Germany in 2000 because, in her words, love follows the stomach.
Ain't that true?
She worked for many years as export sales director for German-based multinational producer Ray Kenderman.
In short, Alison has had a ringside seat into German wine's fascinating evolution over the last quarter of a century. So I started by asking her, what's exciting about German wine right now?
Ah, crikey. Everything, actually, is exciting because We've got a new generation of wine growers who, or winemakers, I should say, who've all been trained at Geisenheim. They've been around the world. They've done lots of exchanges. They do their stage or apprenticeships in other parts of the world. And Germany is supposedly cool climate, except when it's a very hot day and it's about 35 degrees. I do wonder about the cool climate. But actually, viticulturally speaking, it is cool climate. And that means that we can produce wonderful Rieslings and the Pinot varieties. So there is Pinot pulling power, lots of Pinot pulling power, because Pinot is something that actually works incredibly well. And another thing that's really coming up well is sparkling wine. So not a sexy name, Sekt, but some very sexy wines.
It's interesting because a lot of people might consider Germany to be quite a traditional wine growing area, but you're saying the opposite.
It was a traditional wine growing area, but actually things have marched on quite considerably. And whereas probably 30 years ago, you would be lucky to get the grapes ripe. And that's why we have a whole predicate system, which was based on the ripeness of the grapes, which was everything. These days, it's much less important. And from 2026, a bit boring, but true, we're going to have a completely new classification system, which will be based much more on terroir and site, as opposed to sweetness level, which is great news because the single site wines are really exciting.
So that's going to be talking about the wine more in terms of where it comes from, where it's grown, than the style of wine it is. Talk to me a little bit about regions and areas within Germany. Obviously, it's a big country, but yeah. what could people sort of start, what's to explore, I guess, in terms of the regions in Germany?
It's actually, people think of Germany as being very industrial and very technical, but it's a very pretty country. So you've got anywhere with vineyards actually is pretty to my mind. But you've got rolling hills in Rhine-Hessen. You've got steep valley slopes in the Ahr, volcanic, slate soils and very steep slopes in the Ahr Valley. You've got the Mosel with its blue slate. You've got the Kaiserstuhl, which is actually, that's the volcanic soils, with terraces and, in fact, more orchids here than in anywhere else in Europe. So many different types of orchid. So you have an extremely beautiful countryside and lots of biodiversity. So all, of course, arranged along the rivers and the Rhine, its tributaries and so on. That's how it all originally started. Those were the warmest sites, but now you don't actually necessarily need so much warmth because global warming is doing its thing.
Yeah, so let's touch on that. You know, you say that Germany traditionally has been considered cool climate, mm-hmm. but that's maybe not the case anymore. Is that just a result of climate change? And if so, what's the impact of that on the wines?
I think I did a lovely tasting of the 2018 Großer Gewächs wines a couple of weeks ago, which was a very hot vintage. And 5 years on, it was extraordinary to see how great they were looking, and they were not hot, overblown, lacking in acidity. Whereas in 2003, which was probably the first really hot vintage here in Germany, the growers hadn't quite got used to how do we deal with this. They were more used to cool and rainy seasons, and therefore it really shows that people have got to grips with it. And there's now far more dry wines, the acidity is well balanced, and the physiological ripeness is great. So lovely wines.
So you talk about Großes Gewächs. Could you just explain to us exactly what that is and how people can understand it and appreciate it?
Okay, so the VDP is an association of probably around 200 of Germany's super estates. Of course, there are other estates that aren't part of the VDP, which also make stunning wines. But the VDP is a very special association. And the Großes Gewächs is the dry wine style, which has certain regulations that it has to follow, but making probably some of the best wines that Germany has to offer.
And those are single vineyard
correct
wines. So we're talking about, you know, this concept of terroir becoming much more important in German wine. How important is the single vineyard concept in Germany?
It wasn't important at all, but now that's what people are focusing on because they realize that actually the individual vineyards, you can really express the terroir and really express the greatness of the whole combination of everything that makes up terroir.
Riesling. is the grape variety perhaps most closely associated with Germany. Can you just talk to us about the modern styles of Riesling? What can we expect from modern German Riesling?
I think in the past there was something called the Charter or Carter movement, which was the first introduction of dry German wines, a dry Riesling in particular. But in those days, they hadn't quite got the hang of physiological ripeness, so they were quite acidic and sometimes a bit thin. But these days, thanks to just more knowledge and better climate and so on, now the wines have got really good balance. And I think that's one of the things with Riesling. It has this ability to age extremely gracefully with its rapier-like acidity, but the winemakers are actually taming the acidity so that it doesn't appear so obvious, and it's much better integrated and really delicious wines which have a purity and a vitality and vivacity. They work very well as aperitifs, but they also work extremely well. And of course, you've got a whole range of different styles, from the light and racy wines from the Mosel, which potentially some of them will have a little bit of residual sugar, all the way through to much richer, opulent, more Baroque styles. So there's a whole gamut of range of styles.
Love the idea of Baroque Riesling. But equally, people might say it's difficult to navigate the world of Riesling when you buy a Riesling. Is it sweet? Is it dry? Is the acidity going to be too high for me? Are there any sort of tips you'd offer people on how to make that a bit easier?
Buy as much Riesling as possible and drink it.
Love that philosophy. But it's not just about Riesling, is it? There's lots of other things going on in Germany in terms of interesting grape varieties. Can you single out a few for us?
The Pinot varieties are what the Germans love as well. So Weißburgunder, Grauburgunder and Spätburgunder, or Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris and Pinot Noir. So those work incredibly well, particularly so in the more southerly areas where it's a little bit warmer in Germany. But also there's little pockets of some exciting things like Blaufränkisch, which is really interesting. There's a little bit of Grüne Veltliner. There are also, of course, the PVs, as we call them. So that's the Pilzwiderstandsfähige, I think, something like that. Anyway, bit complicated, the term, but basically they're hybrids which are more disease resistant. And they are probably in quite a lot of vineyards and used for the most part in blends just as a tiny bit, but it's one way of counteracting a little bit the global warming thing, but also trying to be more environmentally friendly in the vineyards.
What's the future for German wine?
There's more and more interest in working organically, and Germany, because of the problems with fungal diseases, it does mean that's not as easy as perhaps in some other countries where it is hot and dry. But there is more and more interest. I believe it's about 10 or 12% of all vineyards are organic. Plus, there's more interest in biodynamics, which is, again, quite challenging in Germany. But people realize how alive the soils are and that really, really works for them. So I think there will be much more interest on that side of things. But also, Riesling's not going to go away. It's still a key grape with about, I think, 24% of total hectarage. And the Pinot varieties, if you want to have an alternative to some of the incredibly expensive but lovely Burgundies, Germany is producing some wonderful Pinot Noirs these days, plus, of course, Pinot Blanc and Pinot Gris.
All sounds very exciting. Alison, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Intriguing about the new classification system from 2026, based not on sugar levels, but on origin.
Yep.
That will be huge for German wine.
I'm not sure I was really aware of that.
I wasn't. Definitely not. No.
Yeah, there we go. No. So I know they've talked about redoing this, but actually it seems like it's happening as a date, so that's great, right? Also good news is this concept of German wine growers getting their heads around proper physiological ripeness in the grapes, which means proper, flavour ripeness, not just the sugar acid levels being right, and how all this then ties in with climate change.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big headline in German wine, isn't it? Beyond Riesling and Pinot, beyond the focus on origin and single vineyards, so much of this is about the warming climate, allowing these new ambitious ambitious styles and winemakers to do their thing.
Yeah, I suppose it's a bit like English wine, I guess, isn't it? You know, we've discussed that quite a bit. You know, what was it? Red Dawn, our Red Dawn episode about how red wine has a big future here. So, you know, climate change has definitely helped German wine on the one hand. On the other, of course, it's really worrying. You've had, you know, those devastating flash floods in the Ahr Valley in 2021. Mm. Also serious drought issues. You know, so Egon Müller was a master of the understatement when he said at the symposium, climate change so far has been very positive, but looking to the future, it's a little bit frightening.
Yeah, so we'll come back to this in a moment when we hear from Stefan Doctor, Managing Director of Schloss Johannesburg. To recap so far, German wine is bouncing back from tough times in the late 20th century by increasingly focusing on things like terroir, drier styles and exciting varieties like Riesling and Pinot Noir. A new winemaking generation backed by warmer conditions are making for an exciting wine scene that's evolving before our eyes.
Yeah, right. So when we were at the IMW Symposium, we visited Schloss Johannesburg for dinner.
We did indeed.
Tasty.
What a view that was.
Wow. And, you know, as well as taking selfies and knocking back some delicious wines, also had wines from Nick Weiss and Wasserman Jordan, didn't we? Which were great. We did visit the vineyard briefly. We were classifying that as work. That was the work.
I think we looked to justify over it from a nice terrace.
We looked at the vineyard.
We really visited it.
Glass of wine in hand. Anyway, it was really interesting to see, you know, with our work focus on this iconic vineyard slope overlooking the majestic Rhine River, you know, over 1,000 years of wine history around us, there was a sign of the future, wasn't there? Irrigation pipes that had been installed in 2021.
Yeah. Well, Stefan told us that annual rainfall used to be about 580 millimetres. Now it's nearer 200 because of climate change, which is a worry for them, especially since they have just the one vineyard, the one variety, Riesling, which has huge history there. So that's where we started, asking about the importance of Riesling to Schloss Johannesburg.
We planted Riesling 302 years ago. That's why is our vineyard the oldest Riesling vineyard in the world. And we believe on the grape variety. We know that the grape variety is able to assimilate on climate changes. That's why we are not afraid of warming the earth, of changing temperature. We believe that Riesling remain the greatest and the right grape variety for us.
So why is it that Riesling can weather, if you like, climate change?
I believe that the warmth will not be our problem. Maybe the style of the wine will change. Our challenge is to protect acidity, to get the plants the possibility to save the acidity. The plus is that we have good ripening process. Again, we have to take care that the sugar level doesn't increase as much. But what we see in the last 20 years, the first decade on 21st century, the plant was surprised. The sugar level was very high, acidity level very low. But in the second decade of 21st century, we see the changes. The plant is already assimilated and we haven't the problem anymore. That's why we believe that it's continuing.
You mentioned temperature.
Yes.
What about water? Because when we visited your estate 2 days ago and we see you've installed irrigation now.
Right. Missing humidity, missing water is the hugest challenge we have and we are facing for. We have still rain. That's good. We have still a huge water surface in the Rhine River. What is good? So we are not completely dried out. But we see that we have much less rain as we got in the last hundreds of years. And this is a huge challenge. We implement an irrigation system. And the question is, if could help it if you have no water for that. So this is really, really something what will challenge us. Good. What I think very important is to get a right soil condition and to get soil which could keep water. We have a loamy part on our Taunus Quart side. The depth is about 1 and 4 meters. So we are still able to keep humidity in soil. But I know they are much more different soil conditions with more sand of gravels. That will be a problem.
And you talked about the importance of evolution, the importance of enduring appeal. When we were with you at the estate, you talked about a lot of the history with sweeter wines. Spätlese is a historic style at Johannesburg. But now, since you joined, you've reinstigated the drier style of wine. Is that where the direction where the wines are going?
I'm sure, yes. We see it in Germany. When we look back on the traditional kind of German wine with predicate steps, there used to be a lot of sweet wines. We see the changes in the consumers' thinking, and that's what customers are looking for. So the demand of dry wine is real high. And what's changed in Germany is that the quality and the meaning for dry wines are rising, and that the customers in the restaurant, but as well in off trade, look for dry wines, high quality dry wines like GG's for Schlossjahr from Germany. That makes 2/3 of the production, but 1/3, 30% approximately, remain in contact with residual sugar. We are not talking about really sweet wines, but style like a Cabinet or Spätlese, which are in a way of half dry, fine head, semi-sweet, slightly sweet, but always in connection with huge acidity. And this keep the wines well balanced. And this kind of wine still remain on the market. And to be honest, demand is rising for this kind of wine. Surprised me as well. It's really surprising for me. I didn't believe it some years ago. But just to take a style of Cabinet, which contains at Schloss Johannesburg last vintage 26 grams of residual sugar. It's not too high, but it's not less. Not too low. The demand is so huge that we are not able to supply the demand. We have the product on the market for 6 months, and 6 months in the years we are sold out.
So dry is increasingly important, but there will always be a place, or there looks to be a future for the slightly sweeter, off dry, richer styles.
I think the magic word is balance. Mm. It's not as important if the wine are bone dry or if there is a 15 or 20 gram of residual sugar. When you are able to produce expressionful, well-balanced wine, you will find your place on the market. And the next thing is to create our own style when the people recognize as a style of a certain producer. And I think this is the key element.
Stefan, thank you very much indeed.
You are very welcome. Thank you.
It's a question of balance. I agree. You know, we talk about residual sugar and sweetness when it comes to Riesling, but really that's not quite right, because given Riesling's high acidity, you don't always notice the sugar. It just offsets the acidity to make a style that's kind of invigorating but balanced.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think talking about sugar and sweetness misses the point a bit when it comes to German Riesling. It's too literal. You know, what you're trying to do is convey the actual flavour experience. And in that sense, the word sort of invigorating, which you use, I think, is absolutely spot on. You know, I'd also add in a word I find particularly useful when it comes to saying, you know, off dry without actually saying off dry. And that's the word succulent, because that's what the sugar is doing for me. You know, it's kind of rounding out the wine. It's just giving it a bit of flesh and balance and highlighting, you know, the fruit textures and flavours.
Yeah, but I mean, a bit like, you know, salt. It's the opposite. Mm. But, you know, when it's well done, it doesn't necessarily make a dish taste salty. It just highlights the key flavours. Mm. And yeah, I think succulent is a really good term in that sense. Mm. You know, it gets us away from talking about sugar, and then it's more about overall balance, as we've said. Plus, precisely these succulent or off-dry styles work really well with food, especially spicy food or fusion food with tons of flavours, including sweetness in there themselves.
Absolutely, totally. I mean, I think it'd be a real shame if Germany lost these succulent or slightly sweeter styles. So, it's good to hear from Stefan that there's still demand for those wines out there. In fact, I think he did say elsewhere at the symposium that there's a sort of generational change going on regarding sweetness in wines, and that new drinkers aren't so afraid of sweetness as people were before.
Interesting. Mm. Yeah. And we certainly enjoyed a glass of Schloss Johannesburg Spätlese when we were there, didn't we? The 2013 Grundlach, which was utterly delicious, and we'd highly recommend. Yeah.
We also enjoyed the Auslese 1964, didn't we? As I mentioned earlier, you know, apparently a vintage that was so huge. I love this. They ran out of space in the winery.
Such a good story.
And so they had to fill up the swimming pool behind the Schloss.
They really did. It sounds ridiculous, but they did, didn't they?
Yeah. No, I mean, I loved it. I know you weren't such a big fan, but
bit of a hint of
it.
Chlorine for me.
You know, it wasn't the best I've ever tasted from them, but it did have that wonderful combination of lightness and depth, which is what you were talking about earlier, which the great German Riesling can have. You know, it was rich, but it was sort of tasted dry, and it was full of sort of apricot and honey flavours. It was, yeah, for me, it was pretty magical.
All of which leads us seamlessly onto our tasting here.
Ah, yes.
We have bottles galore, do we not? Goodness me.
And
we're going to start with something a bit different, a couple of Pinot Blancs.
Yeah.
Now, this is far from the most popular or vaunted grape variety, often made into fairly forgettable wines, frankly, in Italy and Alsace, albeit with exceptions. But Germany seems to be making a speciality of it. Germany's now by far the biggest grower of Pinot Blanc worldwide. And on the basis of these two wines, I can see why.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got the Frey Pinot Blanc 2021 from Rheinhessen here. This one's £18 from Mother Vine. Now, I likened this when I first tasted it to sort of great value Chablis. It's leasy, it's yeasty, it's creamy. Yeah, there's a bit of spritz there, which is what you expect in term white. But essentially, it's quite dry and crisp and foody. And it went brilliantly well with smoked salmon.
It did. I thought it was pretty versatile generally,
yes.
And it's got a cool label and, as you say, great value. As is the Maximin Grunhaus Maximin Pinot Blanc 2021 from the Mosel, and an estate far better known for its glorious Riesling, actually.
Yeah.
But this comes in a Burgundy bottle, so it looks a bit different. £13.50 from Vino Gusto.
Great price.
Now, this one's it's a bit of a different style as well. It's got racier acidity, probably more elegant succulence, but really easy drinking, characterful. You know, it shows the place and the variety. A really good all-rounder or a restaurant wine, I would say. I mean, absolutely lovely stuff.
Yeah, so it's a real showcase there of how German wine is becoming more diverse, you know, doing things you might not expect. You know, these are everyday classics, aren't they? They work as an aperitif or on the table with food. They're great value. Just, I don't know, just a bit different. They're not what you might necessarily expect from Germany, as I said, but they're just delicious and, I don't know, pretty delightful.
Yeah, yeah.
They're really getting excited. And I think that's, you know.
I know, well, we were tasting these wines, really were.
Yeah,
and I would say a bit of that Pinot pulling power that Alison mentioned. Anyway, moving from Pinot, moving on to dry Riesling. We've got a couple here. First up is the Klein Riesling S Trocken 2021 from Pfalz. $14.99, which is the angel price at Naked Wines. But again, another great value wine. It's got cool packaging.
Yeah,
not the most expressive in aromas, but you've got hints of ginger and a bit of apple rind. But then on the palate, we're back to succulent, a bit spritzy, rounded, juicy, upbeat. I would say definitely one for spicy food, maybe curry. I mean, it's just a lovely modern style, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we should probably mention here, in terms of terminology, we've mentioned trocken, just to be clear, that under German law, trocken, meaning dry, can have up to 9 grams per litre residual sugar. That's not very much, but halbtrocken, off dry, can have up to 18 grams per litre. But actually, you know, the level's not actually that important. The idea is that the wines taste dry or off-dry, because
off
the sugar is just balancing the acidity and not making it sweet in any way.
Yeah, so this Klein has 6.7 grams per litre, and it tastes fruity and succulent again.
Yeah.
But essentially dry.
Yeah.
And then the next wine, similarly, this has 8.1 grams per litre, but again, pretty dry.
Yeah, and this one's the Robert Weil Kiedrich Thurnberg Riesling Trocken 2021. Now, this is obviously a famous Rheingau producer, and this wine is really classy, isn't it? You know, there's a tremendous sense of weight to this wine, of I don't know, substance, but also a real lightness and delicacy. It's kind of juicy and savoury. It's quite understated and quite young. I think this will come out of itself over time.
Yeah.
You know, you called it, I think when we tasted it, you called it self-assured. And that's exactly what it is. It's sort of I think it's probably more of a connoisseur's wine. It's one to age. It's not the easiest to find in retail. I think it goes more into restaurants, but I think this one's about €30 in Germany.
But really good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
really
just classy.
Good. Yeah.
Classy stuff.
And then we're going to turn to a lighter style of Riesling. And I've got a delicious one here. It's the Pauli Lisa Niederberg Helden Cabinet 2021 from the Mosel. So 8% alcohol, like that.
Yeah.
£22 at Cambridge Wine Merchants. Mm. It was so beautiful, or is so beautiful. Tangy, but invigorating. It's rounded. It's spine-tingling almost. It's very stylish. You've got the florality that you might expect from Riesling and fruitiness. I want to say mineral, but I sort of mean a kind of flintiness. And it's just, you know, it's a wine that you could drink a lot of. Germany should never stop making these styles.
Yeah. It was interesting at the symposium, wasn't it? I think it was grower Jürgen Hoffmann in the big Riesling tasting. He said, I believe in Riesling. You know, even in 100 years, we'll still be doing Riesling. So don't plant Tempranillo or Merlot. That's bullshit. You know, it's Germany, we're cool climate, and we're Riesling. You know, I think that got a big round of applause.
It did indeed. No surprise there. That said, we're going to skip to reds now, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. It's a Pinot Noir to finish off with. The Shelter Winery Spätburgunder 2020 from Baden in the southwest. Now, this is delightful, isn't it?
Absolutely,
It's smoky, it's sappy red and black fruit, it's spicy, it's tangy, it's serious. It's just what you want from Pinot Noir. I mean, maybe it lacks a tiny bit of mid-palate core fruit.
It does. To me, it could do with a little bit more intensity.
Yeah, maybe a tiny bit edgy, tiny bit alcoholic. But you know what? It's proper Pinot Noir. It's muscular, it's sort of dry, earthy, sort of rustic style. Totally different to your glossy, ripe New World Monster. You know, and this, it's delicious with Parma ham too, isn't it?
And the best bit about it, £15 a bottle from Howard Ripley. You know, Alison was talking about alternatives to red Burgundy, which is increasingly expensive, as we all know, and hard to find. And here it is, probably way cheaper than you'd get a bog standard village Burgundy.
Yeah.
I know there are some German Pinot Noirs from top producers, which can be eye-watering in price terms,
but
there's also really good value stuff like this too, and that's exciting.
Yeah, you know, especially since we'll be seeing probably, you know, more and more of this stuff in the future. And we all like a good but affordable Pinot Noir. It's kind of the holy grail,
isn't it?
Which is why we're regular buyers of German Pinot Noir ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, I spoke with Patrick Joner, a son of Karl-Heinz Joner, famous Pinot Noir producers based in the Kaiserstuhl, and also with an outpost in Wairarapa, haven't they, in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And he described the best German Pinot Noirs as exceptional and said, I wouldn't compare 100% with Burgundy. They're their own style, their own terroir, and they have their own beauty. But it's all micro. And frankly, there's quite a variety of styles, isn't there, across all the German regions too?
Yeah, and we both really liked the Jonas SJ Blauer Spätburgunder, didn't we, 2017, which we tasted. It was really sort of tangy and savoury and sappy.
Yeah.
But, you know, a bit like the Shelter in style, but perhaps a bit more intense with a lovely touch of age. And just to finish on Pinot Noir, though, you mentioned the best white wine grape episode we did, which ended up with Riesling top.
It did.
We also did the best red wine grape episode, which finished with Pinot Noir.
Pinot Noir,
top.
Of
so you can see
did.
Where I'm going with this.
Yes.
You know, so here we have the nation where Riesling is the most widely grown grape variety. Pinot Noir is the second most widely grown grape variety. That's living the dream. That's the panacea for wine lovers, isn't it?
It's exciting, isn't it? Just as we said at the start,
there's
a memorable sentence in Anne Kriebel's Wines of Germany book, which is, it's only now that Germany is emerging from the convulsions of the 20th century to become its true self and allow the uniqueness of its vineyards and diverse landscapes to take centre stage. The wines bear witness to that. And I think that sums it up nicely, doesn't
it? Really
it
really does. So there we have it. By way of brief final summary, German wine has undergone huge changes in the past 40 years and continues to evolve with styles like dry Riesling and elegant Pinot Noir increasingly taking centre stage. Climate change continues to play its part, and no doubt there is much more to come. Either way, this is one to watch on the global wine scene.
So thanks to Alison Fleming and Stefan Doctor. Thanks also to Liam McCann for the question and Wines of Germany for sponsoring this episode. We'll put all the wine details in the show notes, as well as on our website, and a few photos, including some of us at the symposium, perhaps?
Yeah, we haven't mentioned this yet, but we did interview world-famous actor and now wine producer John Malkovich live on stage at the symposium. And we may have another podcast coming on that front soon, so keep your eyes and ears peeled.
Even more exciting. So if you liked what you've heard, please do leave us a positive rating and review, which we very much appreciate. Thanks for listening. Until next time, cheers.